Friends, this morning we are going to take a look at this subject of the perfection of normal clairvoyance. We're going to begin with some basic theosophical principles that will help illuminate the subject, and then we'll go into the nature of clairvoyance as presented in theosophical teachings, and then this curious idea, what is normal clairvoyance? What's its origin? We'll look into two means by which clairvoyance can be developed and perfected. We'll look at the dangers and potential risks, as well as explore the natural and safe way by which normal clairvoyance can be perfected, developed, even at our stage of evolution. So we'll begin with some general theosophical principles. Theosophy is divine wisdom, spiritual knowledge. So it begins with a concept of deity, or that ultimate one source of all life, which is in everything, trans everything, and unites all into one whole. It is, in fact, the one source from which everything has come. And to our senses and ordinary intellect, it's unknowable because it is infinite. And yet, because of this one eternal absolute reality, there is no separateness. In fact, and everything that manifests is interdependent. All the creative powers that we see everywhere in nature are mirrored within the human being, at least in germ, and all powers of whatever kind, physical, mental, psychic, spiritual, are variations of the one power of spirit. So the universe evolves, if you want to use that word, out of the unknown, and it manifests in a sevenfold manner. So everything from worlds to human beings have a sevenfold nature. And one of the principles, or one of those seven aspects of the human being, is what is called the astral body. And it corresponds to the astral plane of nature, or the astral light that surrounds our earth. So the astral body is the real physical body, we might say. It's made of a very fine electrical magnetic substance. And within this astral body, which is the design body for the physical, reside the real organs of sight, hearing, smell, touch, which are utilized or have to use the outer physical organs to receive impressions from our objective physical world. So all the instances of what we will call ordinary clairvoyance are to be explained by the astral body and the astral light. A second fundamental principle presented in theosophy is this is a universal law, which boils down to a law of cause and effect, action and reaction. And connected with that is the law of cycles. And we see this in every department of nature, visible and invisible. All phenomena can be explained on the operation of law. Clairvoyance, then, is a phenomena, which is the manifestation of the law of cause and effect, working on the inner department of human nature and great nature. And it is a faculty or power that belongs to our inner nature. And like any other faculty, it can set up causes, it can experience effects. And under law, there's a range under that law by which it can operate, a degree of substance or a degree of reach that it can have. Just like we know that our physical sight, under the laws of physics, have a certain range of perception of color and shadow, and a certain range at which they perceive sight clearly or hear clearly. So it is the same with these inner senses. And like any other power, the effects of the power can be either beneficial or harmful, depending on the motive and the knowledge of the one who uses those powers. A third basic idea presented in theosophy is that of evolution. Evolution, which is not only physical evolution, but a mental and spiritual evolution. And the basic idea here is that evolution begins in spirit. It begins to gradually manifest in all different degrees of substance till it reaches the lowest, most objective plane of substance. And then the wave of evolution then returns to spirit. And this is one great cycle. And there is no beginning or ending to evolution. There is only a relative perfection that can be developed in any great cycle. But there is always a new cycle of manifestation from spirit to matter and matter back into spirit. So human beings, as well as their senses, faculties, begin to evolve in spirit before they descend and manifest into this matter that we're familiar with. So we might say that the evolution of the senses begins with that one power of spirit, consciousness, because when we think about it, sense perception is basically consciousness. No matter what kind of sense we're talking about, it's basically awareness, the power of spirit manifested on any plane. But once we come down to the plane of mind, sense exists in germ more as an idea. And when you think about it, whatever sensation you have, beyond receiving the impression, it has to be formulated into an idea so you can recognize it. So heat and cold, or any of the opposite sensations, are just vibrations. But unless they are transformed into an idea, we have no way to perceive it. And we know the way we perceive our sensations can very much, the ideas we have about our sensations can very much affect what we see and how we see. So sensation then moves down to, we might say, idea. And then as it proceeds more and more involved into the lower finer degrees of substance, we would come down to the astral stage, which we said is of a very electromagnetic nature, the astral body. And here, the senses are more like centers of force within our inner nature. And when we think about it, a sense is a power. When we see, we are not only receiving impressions, but we reach out, we extend our ability to see, to feel. We can focus our attention on our senses and hear more. So it is definitely a force, and that force of perceiving through the senses is within the astral body. The physical senses themselves are but the most concrete expression of sense. They are the instruments that have been evolved on this physical plane, the eye, the nose, the mouth, the skin, and so forth, that have evolved to the point that we can receive impressions on this plane and understand them. So therefore, if this is the way all human beings evolved, then every human being has the germ of clairvoyance, this inner psychic vision, not dependent on the physical senses, within them, naturally. And that germ, or that power, or that faculty, like everything else in nature, can evolve, can be perfected. And it may be perfected naturally in the course of the cyclic development, the evolution of humanity. So one example of that is in the Americas here, we have the coming forward of psychic abilities that were not as prevalent as a century or two ago. And so we see a great variety of psychic phenomena as abuses and misuses and diseases related to the psychic nature. So these things can evolve naturally over time, and they will become, we're told, more, even more developed in the great future ahead of us as the evolving humanity. But it can also be perfected, like anything else, through self-induced and self-devised effort. In other words, it can be induced or forced through individual effort. And this, if we have made these attempts in the past, then we may be finding ourselves in this life born with a natural ability to be psychic in this way without having any knowledge of how we got it. Or we may have it in a very mild degree, enough to awaken us the idea that there is more, and we may be enticed to try to develop it, these psychic faculties, to a greater degree by different kinds of practices, which we'll go into briefly in a moment or two. So now we come to the actual nature of clairvoyance, and we can divide it into three basic kinds. So there is the lower or ordinary clairvoyance, and here we're thinking of natural psychics, mediums, and those who develop clairvoyance by sitting for development, certain practices. So by means of pictures, so to speak, impressed in the astral light, all ordinary clairvoyants exercise this unusual faculty. In other words, in clairvoyance, the pictures or images impressed in the astral light pass before the inner vision of the astral senses, the astral sight, and that image is projected then either directly on the retina, in which case it's transferred back to the brain, or it's impressed directly on the brain and thereby goes out to the retina. So in either case, the impression is first perceived within through the astral senses and may remain there, or it may be projected into the physical brain. The one thing about this ordinary kind of clairvoyance, it is only has the power to see into one of the lower grades of astral substance. So the astral substance is just a general degree, a term for a variety of different degrees of astral substance, of which there are seven, from the most ethereal to the most gross, just next to our physical. And so the normal clairvoyant can only perceive on one of these planes, and therefore their sight tends to be very specialized, subject to the waves and forces of the astral light. It's transitory, it can be fragmentary, it can be inadequate, it can be reversed, it can be very deceptive. And then we have another kind of clairvoyance or clear seeing, which is called higher clairvoyance, or what we might call spiritual vision. Now, this is much more rare, and it requires long training and discipline, but this is really more related to spiritual knowledge, the ability to see not only on all the different degrees of substance of matter, and the forces and laws operating there, the principles, but the wisdom to put it all together, to make sense of it, to know what to do with it, when to act on it, when not to act it, when not to act it, who needs to know about this, who doesn't, how do we help? All this requires a kind of wisdom that is really a development of the spiritual senses and faculties within the mind, our higher mind. So it is a higher kind of clairvoyance, free from the delusions of matter, able to perceive the spiritual truth, the light of Atma, referred to in our reading most directly. And then we come to the highlight, we might say, of our, and relating to the title of our talk this morning, Ordinary Clairvoyance. What is ordinary clairvoyance? So we're told that because there is this germ in the process of the evolution of humanity, the bringing forth of the powers of senses through all the different degrees of substance, there is the germ of clairvoyance within every human being. It is a faculty common to all human beings of whatever race, creed, sex, condition, or organization, though in the majority of human beings, it is only but slightly developed. And as we said, it will develop more prominently throughout the cycles of our evolution, but it can be also forced or encouraged in a direct way, just like any other faculty of our nature. But if it was not for the germ of clairvoyance, we're told, even slightly active, we could not communicate one idea of any kind to any other human being. And why is that? Well, we're told that brain and the mind working together are exhaustless generators of force. In other words, acting together, they have the power to evolve images and forms, first as astral ones in the astral substance. So we might think of that, the difference between a thought and an idea. So we have a thought, but the idea is even more. It's an image, which is the manifestation of that thought. And that image is impressed in that astral substance, in our astral nature, like every other image. It's impressed by our thought, by our words, and even by our actions, whether writing or any kind of action, because the astral is like a mirror. It reflects what goes on in the physical. So our thoughts create these images in the astral, and the natural astral senses of other human beings pick up that idea and can understand it. And we even have a common phrase when we hear something. We might say, oh, I see what you mean. Or we have that, aha, now I get it. Now I understand it. Or I really feel what you're talking about. We also know that if people have difficulty organizing their thoughts or they're speaking even in a language we don't understand, but particularly if they have difficulty organizing their thoughts and their words, it's very hard for us to get an image of what they're saying, even though they're English words. But if we don't have an idea of what that words mean, an image that we can relate to, it's hard to understand. But there are other ways in which ordinary clairvoyance comes to us as an expressed in everyday life. We see this kind of normal clairvoyance in those in a family that are very close. A mother and a child, especially a parent, will have a natural clairvoyance and sense and see and perceive when their child may be in trouble or have some difficulty or need something, even though they are not nearby. And certainly individuals that live together when witnessing something very often will at the same time perceive or have the same idea at the same time without communicating it to one another. And very often, even in an association of like-minded thinkers, we may think that were having an original idea, but we soon discovered that that same idea was in the minds of several other people at the same time. We just happened to express it first. Another way in which we have normal clairvoyance is in dreams. Images, ideas are impressed in our inner astral nature and perceived by the astral senses, which are operating when the physical senses are asleep. And we see and we learn and we have experiences of taste, sound, sight, hearing, touch in dreams as well. Creative artists have an ability, they can see in their mind ahead of what they create, the image of what they want to produce, and they mold, like the potter molds the clay. They see the image on the paper before they produce it, or they see the portrait within the stone or marble before they chip around and create it. So that's that inner perception, that clairvoyance. And we see that even in the creative genius, where individuals create something new at the same time. Just the telephone, for example, was invented or simultaneously by two individuals separated by an ocean. So they both were drawing on something they sensed or saw within themselves. But this happens in dreams as well. Many of our dreams are very creative. Much literature and art has first been seen in a dream with our inner sight, and then it's reproduced physically. So these are instances of a normal clairvoyance. So we said that there are two means by which clairvoyance can be developed or perfected. One is the natural, the cyclic law, but then there's the self-induced, self-devised method. And once again, if we've done it in the past, we find ourselves maybe born into this life with a natural ability, but we don't know where it came from, and we don't even necessarily know how to control it. But then there are those who, sensing that there's more and curious, want to develop it by practice. And these practices are generally called sitting for development, because they are basically passive, trance-like states in which the individual opens themselves up passively to impressions. And as the impressions just beyond our physical senses are astral, they open themselves up to the astral realms. They expand the sensitivity through this passivity to those inner planes. And this can be done not only by various trance states. It happens in hypnosis, where individuals, especially children, are hypnotized, and under the hypnotic trance, they can read the minds of the of what's going on in the mind of the hypnotizer, or they can be aware of things that are going on and at other areas, other areas besides the one they are in, and report it as occurring under hypnosis. And then in certain practices of yoga, there can be the heightening and development of the psychic senses of clairvoyance. But all these forced ways that directly try to develop the psychic faculties of clairvoyance through the increased ability to perceive with the astral organs into the astral light are dangerous. And they're dangerous to every aspect of our nature. Once I said, they make our minds more passive, make our natures more passive to the impressions within that astral. They make us more mediumistic, where those impressions can come in without our control or knowing how to control it. They can also make us more subject to illusion and delusion, and we begin to get impressions of ideas and images which have nothing to do with the reality, but are but the impressions that are coming reflected back on us from this astral nature. That can be, and since the astral nature, the astral substance is very highly electrical and magnetic, if we allow more of it to come into our nature through this passivity, it puts greater strain on the nervous system and through the nervous system into the physical body. So it can in time develop nervous diseases and even physical one. And most importantly, it's indirectly harmful to our moral nature, because as the astral is the seat of our passions and desires, the lower part of our nature, any attempt to develop those astral senses automatically develops our passions and desires, enhances them. And with those increased selfish passions and desires, our moral nature becomes more and more suppressed, our higher spiritual impulses and inclinations. So it's a dangerous practice in every way. So is there a natural way? Is there a normal way, we might say, to develop this clairvoyance and that follows these general laws of evolution from within, without, from spirit into matter, that is based on self-induced and self-devised effort? And we find that we do get these practical suggestions in our devotional books, primarily, of course, The Voice of the Silence. And in the introduction to The Voice of the Silence, it tells us that the information given here is from the method of psychic development that belongs to the highest esoteric schools, the Trans-Himalayan schools of the adepts. And it begins with this statement: these instructions for those ignorant of the dangers of the lower iti, the lower psychic faculties. So it's specifically directed to how we can develop our higher psychic and spiritual nature without the risk of becoming more passive and more mediumistic and so forth. But we also have this wonderful book that we read an excerpt today, The Light on the Path, which was written, which has its same source as the Voice of the Silence, but it's written specifically for those who have recognized in themselves, either by birth or some inclination thereby, this psychic nature, this natural clairvoyance, and they want to know how can they safely develop it. And so we have this reading, and we just want to finish up here by just unpacking a few of the main points, which will be a good springboard to our questions and answers. But it tells us that we develop this by retreating within and boldly advancing without. In other words, the inner path is one of mental devotion and religious contemplation, concentration, meditation, but it's also outward, engaging with the world, enthusiastic effort to be of service, to help, and also be an enthusiastic student, an observer of the world and the life around us. But and we will find that there's to each temperament, each kind of person, there is one road that seems most desirable and natural to them because of their nature. And so not any one road is the royal road. They can only get somebody to a certain point. All the steps are necessary, like the steps of the ladder. If you want to get to the heights, you can't miss any step. You have to go through all of them. And if even working on our moral nature, to suppress our vices, to practice virtues, even that is only a part of the way. In order to do it, we must use our entire nature. This is a balanced development of all the principles of our nature. And as the thinker, the observer, the witness, we have to grasp, we have to understand our acquired personality in this life. Recognize that what we have acquired in terms of physical, mental, sensation, about the way we think and feel, all that has been acquired through our effort in the past. And now we want to take that individual acquired nature that we have it in this life and rather use it in the service of just this physical existence, inquiring what we want as persons, begin to use it to reach a life beyond the individual, meaning a life in the service of others, whether it be our neighbors, our friends, our family, our community, our nation, our race, or even the lives in the lower kingdoms around us, all of nature, but begin to use that as an instrument to reach out and help others. And so how do we do this practically? We have to study ourselves. We have to study our inner nature. We have to become students. We have to test and verify all experiences. We cannot be passive. We have to actively engage our mind in the critical thinking and the evaluation, test, check, and verify everything that comes to us to avoid being passive. And we have to use all our senses, our physical as well as our intuitive psychic senses, in order to understand the world around us and other people. We normally use this, our senses, because in the gratification of our desires, we sense something, we like it, and then we want more of it. So we use our senses to find and explore into the world around us more experiences that can gratify that desire. But now we're going to use those same senses in order to understand and gain wisdom. And we're going to study the laws of nature and our own being. And with all this, decide that we are now going to devote our inner nature, our personality, and its all its aspects to the dictates of the spirit within. In other words, we're going to make ourselves more porous to the light of the soul. And as we do that, that light grows stronger and we develop this normal clairvoyance we have becomes greater and greater, more able to see the light of spirit, which is true clairvoyance. It's not the advanced, complete spiritual wisdom of the adept, but if kept up life after life, its ultimate perfection will be in what we have manifested in those great souls we call the Mahatmas, the perfected human beings. So we're going to stop here and give you the opportunity to ask any questions or comments or on these ideas or anything about this subject that is particularly important to you. So MDW?
Not only the mind is sees, but isn't the heart a valuable tool? We know something, but I guess if we don't feel it, we're not really confirmed in that seeing.
The question is, isn't the heart a valuable way in which we see? And of course, when we use the heart, it's a symbol for feeling. It's a symbol for feeling. And of course, we know we can feel in a way that's very personal, influenced by the passions and desires. But we can also feel in a very spiritual way. The most common experience of that is general, true spiritual love, an affinity for others, compassion, aspiration to be of service. We can feel that, but that is the operation of our spiritual senses that are working in direct perception of powers and forces that have to do with our higher spiritual nature. And yes, it does relate to the higher principles of our nature, our mind, and our so-called manas and buddhi, our higher mind and our intuition and so forth. But these are senses that need to be developed. And the safe way is to develop them first. because then you have the wisdom to know how to control and direct the lower clairvoyance without being the victim, without being passive to it, but you know how to use it with knowledge. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Aspiration and compassion was mentioned along the path. How would one's personal views on morality and virtue play into this? Is it even a consideration?
How one would one's personal views of morality?
And virtue.
And what was that last one? Last word?
Virtue.
And virtue play into aspiration. Yeah.
Or the development of what we're talking
In the development of
about.
Of the topic of normal
a
clairvoyance.
normal, okay.
Morality and virtue, how do they play into it?
Yes. So morality and morality has to do, we would say, with the choices that we make, which are basically the awareness of what is virtuous or what is the highest ideal of what we can conceive of what we should do and how we should act in a moment. Versus the lower, those actions or paths that seem to be directed by our senses, by our passions. So we have that choice before us to follow the path of virtue, the highest of patience, charity, sympathy, service, courage, all those things. We have those sort of, but we also know that there's the opposite. And so the morality comes in there. We are self-conscious beings. We have the ability to choose which way we will follow. And so the development of normal clairvoyance in a safe way depends if we do have the germ of that quality of sensitivity to things beyond the physical, to put it into the service of our highest ideal. And to otherwise, if we try to develop it either for our selfish use, or we tr try to develop the lower psychic type of clairvoyance, the development of our astral senses and so forth, especially for personal selfish reasons, that will be disastrous for us for the danger because of the dangers mentioned. And until we develop that higher spiritual aspect of our nature, we are vulnerable to the influences of our passions and desires. And therefore, it's premature and risky for us to try to develop those lower psychic faculties. The higher evolution always begins from above in the spiritual. The evolution of the senses has to begin in the way we think, the way we feel, before it goes to the lower senses. Another question? Okay, we have a chat here.
Yeah, there's a chat and a hand in Theosophy Hall as well.
Which do you want me to take? Good.
Whichever you like.
Well, let's take the chat. Intuition was barely mentioned. Is being intuitive necessary to develop or enhance clairvoyance? If we're talking about the development of normal clairvoyance in a healthy way, intuition is very important because intuition is the direct perception of spiritual things, of abstract realities. And so it is very necessary for that because we're putting ourself in the service of something higher, something we intuitively feel to be real and necessary to us. But it is also intuition is the direct knowledge that comes through the direct knowledge of what is true regarding the inner and outer nature of everything, every force. And that inner knowledge comes as a result of developing the higher spiritual faculties of clairvoyance to see, to know directly through our spiritual senses what is going on those planes. So you have to have that knowledge before you can see that ability, before you can have right intuition, that accumulated wisdom. Okay, there was a question in Theosophy Home.
Go ahead.
So what we're gathering then is for the development of normal clairvoyance, we are not encouraged to take any kind of training because that will be forcing it. So we're looking at an evolutionary development where our spiritual nature gets developed more and the whole idea is to help others. Mm-hmm. Is that right then?
Let's take that idea and just restate it. So the idea here is we are to train ourselves because all evolution for human beings involves self-induced and self-devised effort. That's training. That's discipline. That's making our principles better than they are now. And that doesn't happen without effort. Now, in the process of evolution, those things will gradually occur. But as human beings, we can take our individual evolution into our own hands. But the warning is we have this, unless we are naturally born psychics, we already have this germ of clairvoyance, which we are told is developing even a more accelerated rate here in America. But we have this germ of normal clairvoyance, of which we gave a number of examples. So we know, we sense those things. Can it be developed? And the thing is, yes, but it needs to be developed in the right way. The wrong way is to allow ourselves to become passive and mediumistic, to try to sit for development of the inner astral senses to see into the astral light. There are a number of practices out. The right way is to use the mind and the faculties of the mind, of will, feeling, imagination, and so forth, and discipline the mind in the light of higher wisdom to begin to gradually control the lower and put it in the service of the higher. That's we might say the higher yoga or Raj yoga. And it's the kind of discipline that's taught in the voice of the silence as well as a light on the path. So it is training, it is discipline, but there are two paths that emerge and one is encouraged and the other one is discouraged. Yes, Theosophy Hall.
Is there a connection between the developing psychism and mental illness? We don't know if mental illness is more prevalent now than it was before or not. We have no idea. But is it? But we're just wondering if there's any connection there.
Yes. Well, HPB, in her address to the American Theosophist, said that in America, the psychic faculties would be particularly developing, and we would see more and more manifestations of it, as well as more and more diseases related to it. And that without the development of the manas or the mind, that psychic development could outrun the monastic. So if we can, mental illness, of course, is a too vast a subject to take up now, but we can talk about it in terms of illnesses related to misperception, subject to delusion, believing what is real, what is not real. And it can be also due to the inflammations of our passions and desires, leading to depression and uncontrolled anger or anxiety. Or it can be illnesses of our perception, of our senses, making us subject to hallucinations and a variety of things. It can be disturbances of the way we reason. But all these things, as we said, can be the result of wrong practices of psychic development, either in the past, and so we bring them forth as hereditary diseases in the present, or they can be the result of wrong practices in this life. And being as a humanity here in the West of mixed natures, yes, as these psychic powers unfold, they can show themselves both potentially, depending on the nature of the individual, either as a flare-up or an imbalance of their mental, emotional nature, or we might see the development of more natural psychic abilities. And we know that that's occurred because the science of parapsychology, which at one time was not even considered a science, is now very seriously taken in many departments and studied as rigorously as any other science.
We also noticed that there's many, many web pages online devoted to developing mediumistic abilities, but they don't call it sitting for development. They call it sitting in power. So is this, according to the philosophy of theosophy, it seems like one is letting go of their power. It seems to be a contradiction there. Sitting in power sounds to this student like you're surrendering to it. You're not becoming more powerful. You're becoming less powerful in a sense.
Well, we think we all know the power of words in advertising and how words can be used to manipulate and to lead, and that in itself is the ability to be led and around by the influence of words is itself a passive faculty. We need to critically examine what words mean. And of course, we do not know what these, just by that, we'd have to check, test, and verify. We don't want to make a presumptuous statement about something until we've investigated. But if someone is telling you that you have to sit, what does that mean? When you sit, sitting is a passive, inactive state. And while it takes even some muscle to sit, there's a certain power that's involved. But we can use power to make ourselves passive, and we can use power to make ourselves active. In other words, if I want to reach out and grab something, it takes power to do that. But it also takes power to prevent it. So we can use our powers to make ourselves more passive, less active, or we can enhance our activity. So the point is, whatever we do to make ourselves passive, whether it's called sitting or sitting for power, if it makes us passive, it makes us more open, if it makes us more indiscriminative of the impressions that are coming in, it's going to lead to the same results, the potentially harmful results. So we'll stop here, because we certainly have a lot to think about, but also invite you to our Wednesday evening study class in the Ocean of Theosophy, in which we will be once again taking up these psychic faculties and powers and the laws that are underlie them. So thank you, and our meeting is adjourned.